purposefully moved my glass across in front of it. Pour something flammable into your glass. It's Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang. With me, as always, is Nathan. I wanted 3 seconds of silence, but neither of us could do that without fucking it up. So let's just get right on into this show. I am drinking scotch. Nathan, what are you having?
Coffee with Bailey's.
Oh, phenomenal. Well, I wish I had something to mix into my coffee right now.
I need 5 minutes to go get something to drink. It's because I was brewing coffee.
I had a cup and a half of coffee before we actually started this because I am exhausted.
Yeah.
This is Jaded Gamercast. Let's start off the podcast by talking about what we did this week in hobby. Nathan and I partook in
I was just going to be like, nope, nothing.
Nothing at all happened. No. Nathan and I partook in Onslaught here in Edmonton. Nathan played his Wood Elves, and I played my redone Vampire Counts. Ward has still yet to post the scores, so I can't
say. But I did poorly.
Yeah, I can't say exactly where we landed, but when I asked on the day that we left, Nathan had come in second to last by 2 points, and I was above the middle of the pack. I was in like sixth or seventh. So, you and I have talked about this at length, but we'll go ahead and just give a quick recap. This was 2,200 points. I went 2-2. So two massacres and then one massacre against and one loss. So not the worst thing that could happen. Again, very middle of the road. The only reason why I lost the games I lost, it was very expected. My vampires performed as expected. They did pretty good. But the two weakest links for my vampire counts was going to be artillery empire and artillery dwarves, and that's what I got matched up against game 2, game 3. So it was an uphill battle that I just was utterly unable to win. But I was very happy with my necromancer on the corpse cart. He played very well, and my knights, my vampire, like the list in general, there's very, very few things that I would change. As I said, you would probably lose the knight shroud, but other than that, you know, it was a good showing for them, and I was pretty happy with the way that it was. And hey, you know, we talked about this last week a little bit with Danny and Matt, but I did finish my painting crunch. Everything was painted, based, ready to go for tournament day, a whole day early, which is virtually unheard of. And that was the same for Nathan.
Yeah, I finished painting a Highborn on an Eagle at like 4 p.m. the day before. So at that point, we just jumped in the car, drove up to E-Town. My Wood Elves are all right. Going through our archives, I can pinpoint the exact episode I stopped playing them, which was episode 15, Flaccid Wood. Also surprisingly accurate for their performance this past weekend. And wow, wife, turn your fucking volume off on your computer. And whoop, there we go. My Wood Elves are fun. I literally blew dust off of their case before I set them up. For me, it was an issue of I decided to go last minute, and my demons are still a hot mess because I haven't updated them to reflect the new book and the synergy. So I looked at it and I was like, you know what? If I'm not going to be super happy with my demons, I might as well just take my Wood Elves for nostalgia's sake. I went 1-3. Although, to be fair, I should have gone 1-2-1. But Ward decided that the rule book is stupid for one scenario, and due to his deciding to overrule the rule book, I lost 1,000 victory points.
Mm-hmm.
So that was joyous.
If there's anything that you can take away from that, though, Nathan, you were the straw that broke the camel's back on that one, where you're just like, that's 1,000 points I should not have lost. And then after that, I think Ward was pretty willing to just be like, you know what? I just haven't played fantasy enough to really think about it from that perspective. And again, like, his goal was fine. His goal was to make it so that, you know, there was a little bit more of a point spread so that, you know, people were actually getting points for stuff that was fleeing. It wasn't, you know, because from his perspective, it was like that 7th to 8th perspective where they're just like, what? I don't get points for fleeing anymore. Oh my God. Yeah. So if like two guys are fleeing in a horde of a billion and that's like an 800 point unit, I don't get shit. And it's like, well, that isn't really the case anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's points denial is a huge part of the game, as you said. And your goal in that game was points denial. I mean, you and I talked about this on the way to the tournament. Mm-hmm. Our big goal was knowing when to call the game and really trying to just deny points.
Yeah. Well, and that was the thing, is I was playing up against a Chaos Dwarf army.
Mm-hmm.
And, they were rock solid. I'd never played against Chaos Dwarfs before. So, I mean, I really enjoyed the game. The guy playing him was really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But for my Wood Elves, having practically no hard hitters, it was, it was one of those situations where when his, like, Iron Engine or whatever the big old 8-wound toughness 8 train is that mm-hmm. does a million impact hits, every time it declared a charge, I'd flee because I know that holding my ground is a death sentence. So if I stand and shoot, if I'm lucky, I'll knock a wound off, and then I lose an entire unit. So the whole point for me was trying to draw him out because he moves slower off a failed charge, so that way I can flee further than he's stumbling forward, regroup, get the turn to shooting, flee again, because there were just fights I couldn't win,
mm-hmm.
and I knew that. So I was doing my best to try to avoid those. So again, what ended up happening, due to the fact that I couldn't pass leadership check despite my battle center bearer being there. I had two, my 250 point unit of dryads with their 100 point character were fleeing, still like 20 inches away from a board edge. So easily going to regroup on their leadership of 9. My tree man was fleeing because apparently stubborn is meaningless. I was fleeing from charges with my Glade Guard. So, I mean, like I said, I had a lot of stuff fleeing. The game was called on account of time because it was only the bottom of 4 we made it to.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I looked at it and we're like, okay, so we're adding up victory points. And it was a draw. And it was only then that one of the spectators, because ours was one of the last games going, was just like, oh, no, but the scenario says that fleeing units are destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And that went, and that turned the draw into a massacre win for my opponent, all because apparently the scenario was better. And I hope Ward learns from it, because realistically, the lesson that I took away with it from it was just play an unbreakable immune to psych army.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're going to get fucked for fleeing from charges, which is something that you literally have to do in Warhammer.
Yep.
Why bother taking an army that can do that?
Right. Because, of course, it didn't affect my undead.
Well, and that's exactly mm-hmm. it, is it wouldn't affect any undead armies. It wouldn't affect demons. But, every other army has a flee mechanic as right. a charge reaction. And you're basically just saying, no, I want everyone to stand at all times, even though your entire unit will be dead as a result. Mm-hmm.
Well,
so,
I do also want to mention, because we harped on this quite a ways back with Onslaught, Ward really did clean up the secondary objectives. They were not worth the same as a massacre. They were worth a couple points here and there. They were fun to get, but they weren't so important that you felt like you were losing games just to attempt to get them.
Ooh. And there were 8, all of which my Wood Elves could not get. So, hey, I went 0 for 4 on those. So that was great choices.
I think that was just unfortunate pairing for you. That being said, the other good thing that he really did was that he used rulebook scenarios. He added some secondary yep. objectives for just a couple of counters here and there with the special objectives. So there was 2 other things to think about, but these were rulebook scenarios. We played a pitched battle, we played Dawn Attack, we played Meeting Engagement, and we played Blood or Glory. And, it was really great to see people reacting to that, and it was really great to play those scenarios because they were actually a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And when you were playing against, like when I ended up playing against Scott and his Empire, with all the artillery and stuff like that, that was the only saving grace that I had that entire game, was that he actually had 3 units in reserve because of Meeting Engagement. Whereas, in a lot of other scenarios, it would have just been, a death sentence where, in the game where I played the Dwarf Gun Line, which was an amazing game, like Dwight's a really fun player. He's a really cool guy. Great.
For a jerk, right?
For a jerk who plays Dwarf Gunline. But no, I mean, he was a great guy. It was really good to meet him and actually get a game with him and stuff like that. And I think he probably ended up taking best overall for fantasy would be my guess.
Yeah. The thing is with how we knew we were doing, we were just like, right, we're tired. We're going home. Bye.
Go home, watch the fights and eat dinner.
Yes.
But it was a very well run tournament. It was a lot of fun. And outside of Ward trying to do spreadsheets on his iPad and screwing up the second round matchups, it went off without a hitch, and it was a lot of fun. Every single game was amazing except for the first one. The jerk I played in my first game was just fucking terrible.
However, I hear he didn't slap you, even though I'm sure you had it coming.
True. True. Yeah, Nathan and I played each other in the first round.
You know, it seems to be, in fairness, we did request it this time.
We did request it this time around.
No, I mean, like I said, all in all, I think Onslaught was very fun. One thing it did was excite me to paint my demons again. Monocorn.
Yes, I wanted to talk about
tired.
That.
I am tired of my wizards killing themselves on Dimensional Cascade. I got 3 miscasts this weekend, and every one of them was a Dimensional.
Yeah.
And I'm just done with it.
Yeah. Well, and the 2 games that I lost were against armies that just shut the magic phase down, right? Empire and Dwarves. And it was exceptionally hard to get anything off against the Dwarf guy, against White. I got 1 spell off, and it was because he let me have it in the first turn.
Yeah.
And it was just like, wee! And then every turn after that, he just shut my magic phase down because I couldn't do anything. And you and I both have really started looking at Warhammer where it's just like, no, I have nothing against playing Magic-heavy armies. Magic is fun. It's mm-hmm. a great mechanic. It's a good time. But you just get so tired of it fucking you after a while that, yes. like, I'm looking right back at my ogres going, you know what? I could absolutely make the army that does not depend on magic with ogres. Like, I'll still take a level 4 Slaughtermaster as my lord. I'll kit him out for combat, and I'll just turn it into a, like, just crush army, you know?
Yeah.
Paint up some more lead belchers, paint up a bunch of iron guts, and maybe start looking at playing that list a little bit more, you know, and just being that really hard list where, hey, if I get a spell off, great. If I don't, you know, the army doesn't necessarily need it, you know?
Yeah,
it's not,
you know,
it's not the hinge of my army.
You know, and that's exactly it is, I mean, like, shit, I have, like, if it is a wizard that I've ever played, I've lost it to a Dimensional Cascade in a tournament. I mean, the mm-hmm. this Onslaught, I lost my level 4 to a Dimensional Cascade. The Onslaught I went to with my demons, I lost my 620 point Great Unclean one to a Dimensional Cascade. And it just gets to the point where, like you said, you're just like, you know what, I'm gonna try this no magic thing,
right?
And you know, and that's why I'm going monocorn, because at least with my ward save and my, you know, and magic resistance on everything, I can hopefully help mitigate
mm-hmm.
some of the damage I'll take. Yes, I have to eat augments and hexes for the most part. I mean, I can throw all of my dice at a single one and hopefully right. kill it that way.
But that's an army you're just going balls out, straight up the table, no holds barred. Like, you'll get a turn of magic against me, but, you know, otherwise go to hell.
Well, yeah, you know, and that's exactly it. Is knowing this, you know, it'll lead me to playing differently. If that means that my Bloodthirster is going to fly straight at his level 4 unit and allocate attacks, or whether that means my Furies are just going to, I mean, fuck, I'll throw away 70 points of Furies to be able to allocate and kill a level 4 wizard. That's a fucking winning trade-off.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I'm concerned, hell, even a level 2 is worth 70 points of throwaway garbage.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's so much that the list can do. You know, you're right. I do have to bend over and take it. I don't have any defense other than the magic resistance that's on all of the Cornate Demons. But who cares? I'm building a list and I'm aware of that. Mm-hmm. Unlike when I'm taking these wizards and they implode. Because for the record, both times when I lost my Great Unclean one and when I lost my Spellweaver to Dimensional Cascades, it was the top of turn 1. So my opponent mm-hmm. has done nothing, and I've already given him almost 1,000, you know, in the demons game, the Great Unclean one was also my general. So he earned 720 victory points on the top of turn 1 before he moved. And I'm just like, I am done with this bullshit.
Yeah. And, you know, like, I still love playing casters. Like I said, I was very happy with my Corpse Card and Necromancer. They did exceptionally well. Like I said, there's very few things that I would really change. But, you know, outside of that, I was very happy with the list. Everything performed well. But I am looking more and more toward getting away from those magic dependent armies. You know, mm-hmm. I have other armies that I play, you know, but the 2 competitive armies that I have are Lizardmen and Vampire Counts. And both of them are just so dependent on that magic phase, to make the game work for you, that it gets frustrating tournament after tournament after tournament, where you either end up playing Dwarves and guess what? You don't get a magic phase, or yeah. you're hoping for just nothing but Irresistibles. Right.
No,
and
but,
it's
yeah,
just that's the fucking problem with it.
You know, and even on that point, the one game that I did win this weekend was against a Vampire Count player. And I will guarantee it's because his dice rolls for Winds of Magic sucked. You know, like, we went to the bottom of 6, and I think he had 1 magic phase where he got more than 5 power dice.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the reason, is it's really easy for me to shut down a magic phase when, you know, I've got my wood elves giving me plus one to spell dice, and all he's getting, you know, all he's throwing at is one little spell and one big spell.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just like, okay, you can have the little one and stop invocation. There.
Yeah.
You're out of dice. I'm out of dice. We're good.
There you go. All right. So let's talk about our weekly listener poll. This was brought to us by Danny Beyer, who was a guest host last week. And his question was, do you think that Forge World models are acceptable as replacements to fill in for the shortcomings of a codex? The options were yes, no, and I don't care. And this was a relatively close race. The majority, by a slim margin, said yes. So 22 votes for yes. And we had 19 votes for no and 8 votes for I don't care. One of which was me. And I really don't care. And that's where it comes down to. I don't really have a preference when it comes to Forge World. I understand that there are one or two things that are kind of broken. But, you know, in my experience, the
case just assault rams, baby.
Yeah, exactly. But in my experience, the majority of the stuff is either well-priced or overpriced. So, you know, I typically don't care if somebody wants to take Forge World. I don't have a big issue with it. I also don't play as much 40K. And 40K is where I guess a lot of those maybe more broken options are. But for the most part, you know, it's to me, it's if it's painted and it's in your list and it makes sense. And, you know, it's not like you're trying to take a Warhound Titan in your Tau army. Fine, whatever. Right? Like, I really don't have a problem with it.
I can't do that?
No, you cannot do that.
okay. Back to the drawing board.
Exactly. But no, I mean, it's just that's the way that I feel about it. I think more power to you if you feel like getting it in there. I feel like Forge World has worked really, really hard to make it legitimate for stuff like this. And Onslaught was a tournament that allowed you to take Forge World. You lost a point in terms of composition for taking Forge World. But again, that's not the end of the world or the end of the Forge World, as they say. And right. But really, you know, like I didn't hear anybody whining, complaining about the fact that there was Forge World on the table.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. This isn't fifth edition anymore. Allies exist. So if mm-hmm. you're going to say I'm going to take Forge World to overcome my, you know, any shortcomings in my list, how is that any different from taking an allied contingent?
That's a
great
to do
point. That exact same thing. So I think in 6th edition 40K, as long as it has the Warhammer 40,000 approved stamp that Forge World is starting to put on its not broken as shit ones, go nuts. Go for it. Take it. Because again, in 5th edition, where you couldn't take allies and your codex was your codex, the idea of being able to take these units from Forge World that would basically band-aid over your weaknesses did kind of give you an unfair advantage. Now you are literally limited by your imagination, or if you play Tyranids, you can't have allies for some reason. Sorry. It's still, I still wish I could do a Gene Stealer cult. I wish Guard. Anyway. But no, I mean, I mean, that's my opinion on the matter is if you're mad that people are taking Forge World stuff, just pick an allied contingent. Realistically, who cares? This is 6th edition, evolve, deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I do understand the reluctance of players to look at it that way. And I definitely understand the viewpoint that some players might have who voted no, where they're just like, listen, armies have drawbacks for a reason. You know, Tau are bad at combat, and that's their drawback. They make it up by being great at shooting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why they nerfed the Kroot in some people's minds, is that having the list made them too, I don't know, unbeatable, whatever.
Yeah.
But really, I understand that viewpoint, but at the same time, it's up to the tournament organizer. I think if the tournament organizer is going to say, hey, listen, everybody, here's what's acceptable, here's what's not, and they're right on Front Street about it, and, you know, everything is laid out, well, you know what you're getting into in that tournament. So if you don't want to play in a tournament that allows Forge World, don't play in a tournament that allows Forge World. But really, it's, you know, I think if people are buying the models, painting them up, getting them into their armies, and they make sense, then I don't see any reason why people shouldn't be able to use them. Mm-hmm. Definitely in pickup games, I think they're awesome, and it adds a great amount of depth and a little bit of freshness to the game, you know, where it's sorely needed.
Yes, and you know what? One thing that I wouldn't mind seeing as kind of an extension to that is more tournaments allowing Forge World variant lists. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not asking for the 11-point Space Marines from, like, fucking Horus Heresy eras, but, I mean, let's see some Eldar... Shit, I can't even remember it. The one that lets you have, like, Warwalkers as troops and shit that was in the Fall of Myrmidon or whatever. But I mean, a lot of those variations, like even God, you know, you'd think I would do some homework before I started talking. The Downey Imperial Guards, Elysian Drop Troops.
Hey, there you are.
But I mean, like, you know, I would like to Downey. See Elysian. If you look at their armor, it's quilted.
Oh, right on. The I got you. Bears, bears wipe their ass with Elysians.
That's right. No, but I mean, you know, I'd like to see legal Elysians. I'd like to see legal Death Corps of Kree. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, one thing that I will applaud 6th edition for is it kind of breathed new life into the very stale matchups. Now we just get stale allies like the Grey Knight Necron combos that are apparently all over Adepticon. You know, but... I would just like to see more variety because I feel that 40K as a game now has so many dice rolls built in that you can't really break it. Like, there's no list that is just unfucking beatable thanks to hull points and Overwatch and all of, you know, flyers. All of these mechanics really just kind of tie in to make the game more, you know, less predetermined, mm-hmm. you know. So let's add some variety. I mean, I know... You, for one, would love if Talarn had actual Talarn rules as per some of the other things that made them play differently than just stock Imperial Guard. You know, I would love to play a drop troop list. I think it would be fucking amazing to have air cav and dropping yep. APCs out of Valkyries on flybys and shit like that. Like, I think that it would be a breath of fresh air. And so, I mean... Yeah, anyway, that's my rant. Let's just have more variety.
Variety is always nice. All right, so it's time to talk about the main topic of today's show, which is High Elves. Obviously, High Elves are on the way. They're coming up soon. In a week, we'll be seeing them in the White Dwarf. Week after that, we'll have the book. Obviously, we'll be doing our coverage of the book, episodes and episodes talking about that kind of stuff. But due to the overwhelming... quantity of pictures that we're seeing online. We had a lot of people ask us this weekend, what do you think of these models? What do you think of the Eagle Chariot? What do you think of this, that, and the other thing? So we're going to talk about that stuff. And that brings us to the model of the week. And the model of the week is the Eagle Chariot. I think this is the one that has people split more than anything. There was a lot of people mm-hmm. on the Facebook group kind of talking about, oh, I hate it. I think it's stupid. What a dumb idea. You know, it's just ridiculous, as some people said. I don't know. I don't agree with a lot of the negative feedback that this thing is getting. But I want you to kind of give your spiel first there, Nathan.
Okay. Flying chariots, demons have them. Deal with it. It's not new. Not talking about the aesthetic yet. Which I do like. I think it's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. One thing that we can see from all of our leaked pictures is thus far I've counted three different variants. Okay. So we have a variant that has a big old bolt thrower on its back. So, is this going to be as strong as a bolt thrower? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe it'll be weaker because it moves.
Mm-hmm.
Will it be able to move and shoot again? We'll have to see the rules. But I do find it interesting that one of the variations has a big old ballista on it. Then you have what looks like a just normal archer. And please let them release that archer as a whole plastic kit of archers because he's fucking awesome compared to the static as shit archers.
Yeah. Well, but with the parts left over, he still makes a great unit jam.
Yes, so that way he can stand out as being the only elf wearing armor in that unit.
Because mm-hmm.
they are all just wearing, like, fucking robes.
All that extra padding on those fluffy shoulder pads and arms, that's a 6+ save, son.
Ooh, see, I just thought it was, like, 80s suits. You know, big-ass shoulder pads going on. It's the fashion at the time.
It's hammer time.
But then, you know, the third one, it looks like there is a hero with a wicked-ass trident riding into battle on that. So that makes me feel like this is exactly like the Burning Chariot of Tzeentch that they have in the Demon's Book. Mm-hmm. It looks like you have the amount option, and I think if Wizards can take it, then it is going to be full of win, because...
I doubt it.
Yeah. It's hard to say.
I think just because, and we'll talk about this a little bit more in terms of, like, you know, what does this mean for rules when we get there? So I guess maybe I'll save that comment for later.
Okay. But no, like I said, we know for sure it can deliver a combat character just based on the pictures, and we know for sure it has the option of being mobile firepower support in a high elf list. I think both of those things make it very, very interesting. Now, will it be viable as a character delivery system? Well, I'm
not
sure.
The model, Nathan. What is the model? It's the model of the week. We'll talk about the rules when we get to the rules. What do you think of the model?
I think the model... Conceptually, I like it. I like that high elves are moving all to the air with phoenixes, dragons, eagle chariots. It's really, really cool. So
I feel like a parent with a Ritalin child.
Well,
focus. It's your homework.
Plastic bag. No, but I mean, like I said, I like it. I like the direction that they're moving high elves into with all the flying. I think the pose on the eagle is spectacular, mm-hmm. and I can speak from a position of authority since I just painted a pewter great eagle on Friday. I think the eagle posing is nice, and I like the detailing on him, how he has mm-hmm. the fucking high elf helmet, the high elf cufflinks, the fucking harness on him. It all really, really works, and he looks very dynamic. The chariot proper looks like a fucking steampunk skyship,
mm-hmm.
which I personally like. And we've covered how I feel that the archer is the best looking fucking archer that they've
mm-hmm.
ever produced. So in terms of model, I love it. I don't think that there is anything wrong with it. I think the only people that are going to complain are people who conceptually find the idea stupid, because the model itself is baller.
I think they did a very good job putting it together, and I think from a concept standpoint, it's very strong. I think that the eagle, as you pointed out, is very, very well detailed. It looks great. The pose is amazing. I love the fact that they did the feet on this eagle as feet, not just fucking T-Rex legs tucked up underneath its ass on yours, right? Like,
yep.
It's eagle claws. It looks like an eagle. I really, really like that. I like the armor on it. I think it's very cool. I love the concept. And, you know, I had said this weekend where I actually thought, you know, like, it's an original concept. And you're like, fuck it, demons have flying chariots. I'm like, I'm not just talking about flying chariots. I'm talking about the idea that they looked at the high elf army and they said, right, we want more mobility. We want more shooting. We want to be able to deliver this aspect of the list, as opposed to having the high elves just be the ASF masters, so on and so forth, where shooting has completely gone to the wayside, right? Like, if you look at high elf lists in the last couple of years here, you really don't see a lot of guys taking repeater bolt throwers. You don't see a lot of guys taking archers. You don't see a lot of guys taking any of those options, and nobody's taking high magic because of it. So, you know, I absolutely love the direction that they're going in. The ship itself, which I think the majority of people are having an issue with, two things. If you're bitching because you think it's ridiculous and it's stupid and an eagle would never be able to pull, lift, weight, drag, thrust, and you're an aeronautics geek, just fuck off. It's magic. Okay.
Suppose there are two of them carrying the coconut together.
Exactly. No, but in this case, I think that the design is very cool. I love, like you said, that kind of steampunkish type aspect, even though there's no steam involved in this.
Wait for the dwarf flyer.
Well, yeah, exactly. But that's what I was going to get at. Anybody who bitches and complains about this can't look at a gyrocopter and be like, okay. Right? Like, it just
– yeah.
You can't look at the plague drones and be like, yeah, sure, why not? You know, like, there's so much stuff in this universe that you have to just look at and accept and just say – yeah, obviously, let's do that. Even the steam tank, for fuck's sakes. And that's science. That's not even magic. In this case with the elves, the wood can weigh nothing. The guys riding it have hollow bones. I don't give a shit. It's magic. It looks cool. It's well-designed.
And Harry Potter has a levitation spell.
Right.
Dude.
It's Leviosa. Nathan, Leviosa.
You know, I was about to do that. I know you were. I was just like, no.
I wanted to beat you to the punch. I know we're both big Hermione fans. But really, you know, I love it. And like you said, I think that it's going to add a lot of depth to the army just in the fact that we've seen three different types of models for it. It looks very cool. So I think Nathan and I are on the same page when it comes to this. I know a lot of people don't like it. I know a lot of people are looking at it with kind of this, are you serious type thing. But when we see the full 360s on the Games Workshop website, you might feel a little bit different about it. I highly doubt we're going to see Wizards on it. But for the most part, I mean, it's a clean model. And with a range of models where it's nothing but gems and hair and gems and capes and cloaks and...
Oh, wait till we talk about the Phoenix.
Oh, we'll get there.
The Ice Phoenix and his bullshit.
Oh, my God. But, like, I think it's a very streamlined, clean, well-conceived model. You know, it probably looked as good on the art page as it does in the model form.
Agreed.
All right. So let's actually talk about these pictures. And you know what? Let's go ahead and start from the top here. Which is the wizard Hadoukening an ethereal squid. Let's just talk about the concept. So it's a shitty model, but we'll talk about that another time. We're kind of getting into the show here, so I want to talk about what we suspect. Your guess here is that this is going to be a Wizard of Hoeth.
Yes, because even though we said we haven't really been reading up on any rumors, one thing that I did see was that there is supposedly going to be a new Wizard of Hoeth added to the book. And when you look at this guy, he kind of screams tacky, gaudy swordmaster.
Mm-hmm.
But then Hadoukening the ethereal squid is when you're just like, oh, maybe that's supposed to be a fireball. And that's when you're just, that's why for me, I do believe that this is going to be the Archmage of Hoeth. I think that he will be an elf caster that can wear armor, judging by the model.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows how his wizarding will work, whether it's going to be just the typical pick a lore, here's a special lore, who knows. The rumor that I heard is that he will know all of the signature spells from all 8 lores,
mm-hmm.
which makes him very interesting.
Very, very interesting. Not amazing. But the utility that he brings to the table is pretty crazy. One of the things that I said to you was, what's really great about it is that each of these lores, typically the signature spell has the lore attribute on it. One of the things that you had kind of countered with that was saying that it's possible that, yes, he'll know all of the signature spells for all the lores, but he will have his own magical attribute and it won't actually use the lore attributes from these different lores, which I also found very interesting. So I think it could go either way. I think both are utterly viable. And I think if there's any army that's going to do something like that, High Elves is the one to do it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So Alariel and her Maiden Guard are the next things that are coming up here. If you remember anything about my High Elf plans, Alariel was a huge part of that because her rules were fucking amazing. The Maiden Guard were amazing. They were basically Lothran Seaguard that were like a point more expensive with better stats and a shit ton more special rules that were just crazy awesome. And this was back in the day when, again, the only option for Lothran Seaguard was the plastic kit where you'd basically just glue a bow to the back of a spearman. So because they had been modeled with spears, swords, and bows and like a quiver, and they'd done it very well, I was going to do a huge unit of them and use them as Lothran Seaguard and use Alariel as my Archmage. And then on certain games where people would allow me to use the old chapter-approved special rules for Alariel.
Like beginning of 6th
edition. Oh, man, way back when. I was going to use her as Alariel and use other stuff. I love that they're bringing her back. I think that them bringing her back is a great, awesome change of pace because it's going to actually turn people away from those techless lists. Because
yeah, but techless is not keeping that ability. Getting auto irresistible.
We all know that he's not going to keep that ability. I mean, like you said, one of the big things that they're doing is they're fixing stuff that breaks the magic phase. And so they're going to be fixing a lot of that stuff with him. but really, I do think that we're going to see a lot of really spectacular things coming out of Teclis as well. However, I think Alariel is going to be kind of the safe bet more than anything. I think Teclis is going to be a lot more unstable.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, do you remember the rules for Alariel? Because I do. I'll recap them quickly for you.
Yeah, no, I not even a little bit. So go for it.
And Alariel knew all of the spells from High Magic and Lore of Life. So she had Lore Master in both. She had her staff, and her staff allowed her to cast any of the spells that she knows as a bound at its power level. So you could cast Vol's Unmaking twice in a turn. Or you could cast, like, the amount of damage...
And this was back when bound spells were awesome.
This was back when bound spells went off whether you fucking wanted it to or not. Not you had to roll for them. On top of that, she made the Maiden Guard immune to psychology and stubborn, I believe. The Maiden Guard had additional special abilities that went in along with it. If you had her as part of the unit, she also had a special ability where anybody who was directing attacks against her, she would always get to strike first. And if she hit, they couldn't do anything. So she only had one attack, but she, you know, had a decently high weapon skill. She had ASF. And so it was like, it was very hard to kill her because she just kept touching people. And she had, I think she had an invulnerable save as well. So she was actually relatively defensible if your dice were okay. And then the unit of Maiden Guard had a special banner that they came with. And the banner allowed them to do one of two things, and it was once per game. You could either use it once per game to get an extra round of shooting in a turn, or you could use it once per game to get an extra round of attacks in a combat. So like you could go resolve all of your attacks and then just be like, oh yeah, and I'm going to just use the banner, and then just roll another round of attacks as if you just were able to just go and do it again. It wasn't plus one attack. It was you got to attack again. So they were pretty impressive. I doubt they're going to keep a lot of those rules, but I think they're going to keep the same goals in mind when they're putting this list together by saying, you know, here's where Maiden Guard fit into the list. They're not a special unit, like special character type thing. They're just part of the list. Yeah. But if you take Alarial with them, hey, you get all this blah, 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 blah bonus.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the model. Her hair is fabulous. The Pope hat I could do without.
See, for me, I don't mind the Pope hat, but I don't care for the hair, the way it arcs down and clips the fucking robe maning, cutting it off.
I think it's the Pope hat's golden sideburns that throw me off.
But I mean, dude, Elvis is jealous of those sideburns.
Elvis is jealous of all elves because they live forever. Heyo, Elvis is dead. He died on the toilet. All right. I think the model's very well done. I think they did a great job with it. I love that she's barefoot. I think that...
And hearts have replaced her gemstones.
Well, actually...
She is Ma-T.
Yes. Heart. Alarial and her mate... Alarial didn't have a lot of hearts on her, but the Maiden Guard were covered in hearts, the original ones. So I like that they kept the same aesthetic. I'm going to skip ahead to the Maiden Guard before we talk about that BSB. What we're seeing here in one of the pictures, I believe, is a Maiden Guard champion or a Maiden Guard character. I'm thinking that they may give you an option to take an Elf Noble and turn it into a Maiden Guard Noble, and that may come with a couple of cool special abilities. But you have to appreciate an army that's given you female options as a part of the list.
Yeah, you know, again, I agree. I'm not sure if that's just it has to be a character because, looking at the Maiden Guard kit, it is obviously plastic because there's just too much variety in poses. And we can see the unit champion there with the sword. So I am expecting that it is going to be a character, whether it's special like Alarial or whether, like, you know, whether it is, you know, Noble can be upgraded to be from Avalorn or Noble of Avalorn is different. Who knows? But yeah, it's definitely a hero.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So the Maiden Guard themselves, the unit looks nice. Like you said, it's clearly a plastic kit. One of the options to the plastic kit is cold fire ice flame bows. And they appear to be a skirmish unit.
I don't think so, because if you look at a different picture of them, they are ranked up.
I'm trying to find a different picture of them where they're ranked up. Oh yeah, I see the one you're talking about. Yeah, they do. They do actually look ranked up in that picture.
So that's why, again, jury's out on whether they'll be ranked or skirmished. In terms of the modeling, I think they look very interesting. Yep. I like the leather armor look. It's a little more rustic. They all have miniature Pope hats with hearts on them. So yep. You know,
The windblown hair is actually pretty nice. I think the only time that it really fails is when the windblown hair is every single model and it's the exact same.
Yeah, that's
sculpt.
What I was going to say. You should actually model like a fan beside them to get that effect. Or maybe
just a dragon. Just a dragon blowing hot air at them.
That's awesome. I was going to say maybe they are all just auditioning for that finesse commercial. I use finesse.
I never get that job. All right, so what we're
which
seeing...
Which is bullshit. You know, it's fucking discrimination.
It is bullshit. Just because I have short hair and it doesn't necessarily wave in the wind. Another model that we see here appears to be a Seaguard BSB.
Yep.
Do you think we're going to see, considering that we've seen the Maiden Guard from Avalorn type character that looks to be an upgrade for Noble, do you feel like Seaguard are not going to be a separate choice anymore, but they're going to be an upgrade for Spearman and upgrade for Noble?
No, you know what I think we're seeing is I think we are seeing more of that intro into High Elf society wherein everyone is from different provinces and each province is like a world on Star Trek where they're all just stupid cliches. So this is probably just a Lothurn, a Noble from Lothurn, you know, upgraded to be a BSB. I think that's what we're going to see. I think that odds are, like, if I was just going to spitball in the dark, I would say that your core is going to be Silverhelms, Archers, and Spearmen. And then based on your hero selections, you'll bump whatever from that area down into troops as well. So your Avalorn character will make Maiden Guard core. Your Lothurn character will make Lothurn Seaguard core. I expect that Aelith Anar will make Shadow Warriors core. Things along that line, because, again, we're seeing a lot of new plastic kits, and we're seeing a lot of province-specific models. And I think, to me, that's the giveaway. Because, I mean, we even have this, Hadouken of Hoeth.
Right.
Who could make Swordmaster's core. And I wouldn't go that far, because I think Swordmasters are too good for that, but we are seeing all of these characters that are all from specific parts of Ulthuan. Mm-hmm. So that's I think where they're going with it.
I think that's a definite possibility. I think that you're not the logic is very sound with that breakdown. I would like to see the upgrades. I think the only reason why I'd like to see the upgrades is I feel like it's easier to say, here's Spearman, here's the upgrades for Spearman. Because that also allows you to play a very traditional, non-specific High Elf list that is cheaper than everything else. And that would actually be a very viable option. Whereas everything else is an upgrade where they're just like, oh, you're Lothurn Seaguard, you get a bow. Oh, you want to be Shadow Warriors, you lose your spear, you get a bow, and your ballistic skill goes up. You know, like, I think that that possibility is going to be really cool for the list, as opposed to just giving it a shit ton of unit entries and then just having them bounce all over the place depending on which characters you take or which one your general is, you know, in places like that. But no, I don't think you're wrong. I think it's actually more possible that they're going to go in that direction just because we're seeing that a lot more and more, as opposed to saying swap this for this and this goes here and this goes there.
Yeah, because that's a very third ed and sixth ed fantasy kind of way of thinking and building army lists where you swap this for that. I haven't seen a fantasy book do it in a long time, but hey, they bring old shit back all the time. So look at Elariel.
Exactly. But yeah, let's talk about Shadow Warriors. Obviously it's going to be a plastic kit. They look okay. You know, I think they look fine. They look a little bit more ninja-esque, which I think is cool, but I think one of the things I would have liked to have seen on them is actually just them being a little bit more cloaked and a little bit less, I don't know, action posy.
Yeah, I mean, right now I would use them as just basic archers, to be honest. Because
I think you're going to see a lot of that.
Yeah, I mean, the archer kit is fucking terrible and old. And you look at these Shadow Warriors and, yeah, you're right. They do not look like they're super stealthy. They just look like they're wearing full head helms and,
you know,
they wear a cape.
The more I look at these,
do the eyes follow you?
No. The more I look at these, the more I wonder if it is actually going to be a plastic kit.
Yes, because again, you have to
The heads and the necks, like they look like, it looks like the same few models turned at different angles, and they're like, look, left hand. It's a different model, but it's like, no,
you're totally right. Because if you look at the 10 of them, the top row far right is the same as the far left on the bottom That's right. row.
They've just been turned in various directions.
Middle guy.
I think it's going to be a fine cast.
No, you're absolutely right. Because looking at this, I see two poses, one of which is the champion, that are not duplicated, and the other one is bottom row, second from the left. Yeah, these are fine cast.
I think they're going to be fine cast, which totally throws that out. And the big thing for me was looking at the heads. They've made the masks, their helmets drop down a lot further to kind of make them look more like ninjas, a little stealthier. And I was sitting there going like, oh, you could totally bring these as archers to the table. All you would need to do is a head swap. And then that's what made me look at it and go, no, you can't swap these heads.
No.
These are very clearly going to be fine cast. All right.
Sigh.
Yeah, that's really, really unfortunate. Especially when you go look at the picture of like the full unit of them and you can see that, yes, it's a lot of the same pose. And it's also a pose that you would...
poses?
Yes. It's also a pose you would never be able to rank. All right, so... let's actually talk about the chariot, the Eagle Chariot now, specifically with regards to game mechanics. I'm thinking that you will be able to take this also as essentially what would amount to like a flying light chariot unit. My guess would be that they're only going to do D3 impact hits plus one would probably be my guess. They're going to be toughness four, strength four. Sliced. Well, yeah, but if you look at some of the pictures of them, like specifically the one with the dude with the trident on it, there's like a unicorn screw horn on front. I play bass for Unicorn Screwhorn, and that's going to make me guess that like this thing somehow has impact hits plus one.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. I think it'd be very, very interesting if you could take them in unit as units of light.
And that's chariots. What I'm getting at. I think that you're going to be able to take them in units of light chariots. Maybe like a max of three, though.
Goblin Wolf Chariots.
And I think they're going to act like skirmishers, right? Like Pegasus Knights, right? Where it's not going to be like light chariots normally would be where they're ranked up. It's going to be like, nope, they're skirmish. You know, so you know, they fly around and you're not going to get any bonuses or anything like that. It's just, hey, you can take three in a unit if you feel like it.
Yeah.
And then as you said, with the ballista on there or the repeater crossbow on there, or repeater bolt thrower, that's what I'm looking for. The repeater bolt thrower on there, I think it's very, very interesting because it does make you kind of stop and think, well, what's happening to bolt throwers? Are we going to see bolt throwers kind of take on a little bit of a different role where they're going to have a lot of magic buffs similar to dwarves? Or are they going to maybe have a shorter range with better abilities? Is that why we're seeing bolt throwers getting on something like this where the mobility of the bolt thrower is more important? Because
these ones don't look like repeater bolt throwers, though. These look like only the single slugs, which could be what the difference is.
But a repeater bolt thrower, in terms of kit, it's one piece difference between a repeater bolt thrower and a bolt thrower. And it has nothing to do with you saying, hey, it's this or hey, it's that. It's just whatever one you feel like putting on the bolt thrower when you're modeling
it. No, but I mean, but the other thing is with the current rules of the repeater bolt thrower, you just choose which one on a turn-by-turn basis you're gonna fire.
But they give you
what I am saying is this does not look like it has the spray of bolts, and that could be the difference. These are going to just be regular bolt throwers that can move and fire, you know, or not. Who knows? Actually, they're on an Eagle Chariot.
They're going to move and fire.
I was going to say, you don't always know, because in 40K, the Exalted Burning Chariot of Zeench, the Exalted Flamer, cannot fire if it moves. So you don't always know that. But I think the difference that they're going to do is that the repeater bolt thrower is still going to have the multi-shot. They might even juice the multi-shot up, making it more than six shots, maybe eight or ten just to entice players to take that. Because to be honest, I have not seen a repeater bolt thrower on the table in any high elf list I've played since sixth edition.
Mm-hmm.
It just, you know, it's really fallen out of favor. So it could be that this is only a mobile single shot, which is great for you being able to get up the board and always hit the monsters you need to hit. Whereas the repeater will still have the multi-shot and therefore flexibility.
Right.
Or they could just say, hey, everyone that has one and you haven't been playing it anyway, it's gone. These are your bolt throwers.
Right. Well, I mean, when you stop to compare the high elf bolt thrower to an orc bolt thrower and you're like, yeah, I'll take the orc bolt thrower. That's a problem.
Yes.
That's when there's an issue with the design. I think that, you know, I think that you're probably right. I would guarantee actually now that it will probably be just a standard bolt thrower. It might even be one less strength. Because you would never go with a repeater bolt thrower on that thing because you're flying. You would always be on the flank getting that all the way down the flank. You know, it's kind of the best thing that you would be doing, but it'll be interesting one way or another. And like you said, it looks like there's three unit options. In one picture, we see three of them side by side. They could be light chariots that you can take in units, which is also very cool. I suspect it's going to be D3 at strength 4, toughness 4. With a 3 or 4+ save, probably a 4+ would be my guess.
Maybe even a 5+, because remember the Tyranok has a 5+.
Yeah. No, you're right about that.
So, no, you know what? Like I said, I'm excited to see the book actually. You know, because it looks like for the first time in a very, very long time that there is diversity in a high elf, in the high elf book. Because, I mean, they've really just been rehashing the same book ad nauseum. So the fact that we see new units and we see, again, new concepts. Because, I mean, the flying chariot exists only in the Demons book right now as a concept. High elves are getting one. How far are they willing to go? Are they going to make it a caster platform? Which, depending on high elf lore accessibility could be very, very effective. I mean, we might see a return of the fucking purple sun bombs if that's possible or not. I mean, you know, I'm just curious. I love the model. Yeah. I love the fact that there are options. It's flexible. I think due to its flexibility, you will see a bunch of them in most high elf armies.
Yeah, I think the only reason why I think you're not going to see it is because I think that you're still going to see Great Eagles as the primary option for casters. I think a lot of the stuff that we're seeing is specific to heroes, is specific to characters, because I think that they really want to be giving the princes the spotlight again, and they want to really be giving them the options. Because
again, you mean the endangered species that you haven't seen in years?
Exactly. Because really, you know, when you look at the Archmage, can go on, you know, the steed. It can go on a great eagle, and it can go on a dragon. So you have more than enough options for mounts, and you have more than enough opportunity to kind of mix and match. Also, considering the fact that you also have the fire mages. I can't remember what they're called. Fire mages?
They are literally called dragon mages.
Dragon mages, right. You have dragon mages, right? So there's more than enough options there to do what you want to do. I think that these are really going to be focused on the princes, which brings us to the Phoenix kit. What's the name of it specifically? It is the
Flame Spire Phoenix.
The Flame Spire Phoenix, which is also clearly a dual kit. Because you also have the option of taking, I think it's a cockatrice. I don't think it's a phoenix. I think the more you look at the picture, the phoenix is very clearly a, you know, bird of fire. And then when you flick over to the blue one, it appears to be a cockatrice. I think it's a cockatrice.
I don't know.
I would have to guess.
I am not big on Greek mythology. I didn't take classics in university. No, but I mean, I don't know. I think it's honestly a cockatrice. I like the idea of doing a dual kit. Hey, yay, we can get two birds. But good lord, this ice-themed one is fucking terrible.
It's not
like
ice.
You've got okay, fine. The snowflake one, the one with hat with
flakes.
Fine. I don't give a shit what you call it. He has 200 of these bullshit snowflakes, clearly snowflaked, but apparently not snowflake shaped bullshit on every inch of the bird.
You know why they're not snowflakes, right? Because snowflake is the same as another. Hey, science lesson.
All right, you know what? I am out. You know, you can finish this episode on your own.
Yes, okay.
I mean, I think it's terrible because, as you always said, you're like, gemstones everywhere. This is like stupid little detail fetish to the extreme, because it really feels like the sculptor put on like three and someone's like, yeah, it's great, but I can't really tell what it is. Can you put more on? Yeah, I need more.
Are you calling me a moron?
I need more. Fuck.
You're calling the sculptor a moron. Yeah, you know what? I do kind of agree with that. I don't think I took a close enough look at this model because I just kind of looked at that and thought, oh, that's like magical sparkles. I don't know what I thought it was. But my first impression was not that it was ice and snowflakes, because that's actually pretty dumb. It's not terrible.
It's an ice phoenix instead of a fire phoenix, get it? Whereas by comparison, you'd actually look at the phoenix, and it's a gorgeous kit. I think it's still suffering from your problem that you've been harping on for a long time of sculpted fire tends to not work. But I like this. This, I think, does work because they kind of subdue it. Instead of getting feathers, you're getting just the tips of flames. His tail feathers are kind of turning into it. And if I'm not mistaken, if you're looking at the picture that's taken from beneath, looking up at the bottom of the bird, the rider looks different. I mean, his still about the back. Oh, okay.
Same rider. They're all Phoenix Kings. I think that it's literally going to only be a mount for a Phoenix King. We're not
seeing but there's any only other one models. Phoenix King. Well, so. Yeah.
Or like a Phoenix Lord character.
Yeah, I think so. Because again, we're seeing a Hoeth character.
Yes.
This could be the
Maiden Guard Phoenix character, Sea Guard character. Or
Phoenix Guard captain of some kind. Because remember, Caradrian existed as a model and he was a Phoenix Guard special character. So you know what? I think that's not a big stretch. Again, I just think that this is hilarious because I think that with the Flame Spire Phoenix, they've hit it out of the park. The thing is gorgeous. The paint job we're seeing here does the model an infinite amount of justice. It just brings it to life. It makes it pop. And then you look at the other version that it can make and, you know, you can see the painters were trying and they did a good job. It looks nice, but there's just too much gaudy tackiness on every inch of the bird. Like for me, it really does kill it. Like I don't care what the rules are. If I was doing High Elves, I would take the Flame Phoenix 100%, even if it is the worst choice.
Yeah. I like the models for the most part. I think definitely the one that we see from the bottom shot is painted a lot nicer. I think that they got the colors right. They did a good job with the flame where they didn't try to do the black at the edges of the flame. They went with white at the edges of the flame, which I actually personally prefer. I think it makes it pop a lot more. But actually the models themselves, I'm not really happy with because it's clear that we're talking about two different sculptors between the guy who sculpted the Eagle Chariot and the guy who sculpted these. And the reason why that is that you see the seams between the wings and the body so heavily that it's actually really frustrating.
I didn't notice that, but now I'll never stop seeing it.
Now you can't see anything else. It's actually kind of a poorly done model in the sense that like you look at the Eagle Chariot and you're like, that eagle's fucking amazing. And one of the things I pointed out was that I love that they didn't give it little tucked in T-Rex feet, but it actually made it look like an eagle. Guess what tucked in T-Rex feet on this one? It seems pretty half-assed in a lot of places. As much as I love the concept, and I think that from a rules standpoint, they're very interesting, especially due to the fact that we do see a picture of two of them without riders. So, you know, it does seem as though we're going to be able to take these things just as straight-out units on the table.
Yeah, I think you're going to see the same thing you see with Arachnorox, where they will be a rare choice, or they can also be a mount for characters. And again, I think it is going to be only fighting characters, because I do think that they are really trying to push the prints hard, because, again, after playing years of this High Elf book, or rather, against it, all I ever see are Archmages or Teclis, you know, I'm going to go that route. And the only fighting character is your Battlestander Bear.
That's right.
And that's it. That's all you're going to see is you're just going to see Wizards and one BSB. And I think that it's a shame when you consider how good the combat kit was in that High Elf book.
Yep.
And the stat line of Lord. Like, there is some serious potential there. So I do believe that this is going to be a mount for a combat High Elf Lord. I think it's the Flamespire Phoenix, other than that wing joint thing, looks great.
The head, too, I hate.
The head's okay. It's a bird head. Personally, I would take the head that is on the blue one, the top view.
Yes.
That is the head that I would use, because that is by far the best.
Yeah. All right, so that's the pictures that we've seen so far. I think it's piqued our interest, to say the least. The biggest thing that we're going to see in terms of the High Elf book is going to be a massive shift in the mechanics. Nathan, you talked about it this weekend a little bit, but you were saying that the general rumor is that they're getting rid of Always Strike First being across the list. That means they're going to be getting rid of Hatred across the list on the Dark Elf side. Why don't you just touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, this is one thing that seems very credible. It's a rumor that I read online, and the only reason I say it seems credible is when you compare it to the recent Chaos treatment that we've seen. Mm-hmm. And the rumor is that they are going to standardize the rules across the board for elves. So, you know, rather than them just trying to one-up each other and have like, well, these are Always Strike First, well, these hate everything, and these chain themselves to redwood trees when the loggers come. Rather than seeing that kind of weird mechanics where you're going to try to differentiate the armies on a cheap special rule.
Well, as you said, everything you look at in the High Elves, you go and look at Dark Elves and you're like, yeah, Dark Elves.
Yeah, you know, and that was another thing that I said this weekend was, every time I look at doing a High Elf list, I'll make up one. I'm not super happy with it. I can go make the exact same list with Dark Elves and then spend 500 more points on shit.
Right.
Because ASF is so heavily costed. The rumor is that all elves will just have a set of elf universal special rules. Mm-hmm. So these could be that all elves are initiative 5 plus, or they could be, you know, the elder race, which makes them all immune to psychology. Who the fuck knows what it's going to be? But that was the rumor that I heard, is that High Elves are going to be the first book that has this sort of set of elf rules. So expect ASF to leave.
Yeah.
When Dark Elves get redone, and they would be the second elf book, because, I mean, with ASF gone, Hatred is just really... Yeah. Again, why would you not play fucking Dark Elves?
I think
Hatred will then get cut out, and Wood Elves will be the last book that you'll see. And then they'll try to differentiate them through gameplay mechanics. And I think you're seeing this with High Elves getting flyers out the ass. Because now, I mean, if you do a list, they have Griffins, 3 kinds of dragons, Eagle Chariots, and 2 different kinds of Phoenixes. Like, they have 7 flying units.
Well, you know, one of the big things I said was that they're going to go away from the stuff they've done before, and they're going to focus on mobility. And then these pictures were released, and all we saw was flying unit after flying unit after, you know, all of these extra bonus units and all these extra shooting units. So I figured, okay, mobility and shooting is what we're going to see. You know, and I think that you're on point there. When you had brought up the bit about, like, an elf, quote-unquote elf special rule, I kept trying to think, well, what would that mean in terms of special rules? You know, like, what would really set it apart? What would work well across all of the different elf books? And one of the things that I came away with was something that wouldn't break the game but would be a nice bonus is that I think elf universal special rule is just going to be they reroll ones shooting in combat.
Maybe.
Because, again, it's not Hatred. It's not ASF. Right? Like, it's not all of these different things, but, you know, when you look at it and you say, well, you know, these units can be given ASF, or these units do have ASF, you know, or these units have Hatred, or so on and so forth, you know, that it's a nice happy middle ground that doesn't amount to 3 or 4 points extra per model. And I think that, you know, it makes sense in terms of the fluff, because these are immortals. They've been alive for thousands of years or hundreds of years, whatever. Them being that shitty with a sword when they need to not be shitty with a sword doesn't happen. And I think that that's enough of a fluffy rules bit thing that makes you go, elves. That makes their shooting great without having to make longbows balls out amazing or make them dependent on magic bonuses and, you know, like magic banners or things of that nature. Where now you suddenly look at elf archers and you're like, they get to reroll ones, eh? Might actually happen.
They hit on 3s at short range and reroll ones, I'll take it.
And that's exactly it, right? Like, I think you probably will see something like that, because I could not think of anything else. Literally, I couldn't think of anything else that would actually fit like an elf universal rule.
You know, agreed. It is really hard, because, I mean, I don't think, even though I just threw it out, you're not going to see immune to psychology.
No.
Because it makes them not be able to flee from charges.
That's right.
So even though, you know, an immunity to fear, terror, and panic could make sense when you consider these are people that ride dragons and have probably, you know, some of them could have been around during the first Demon War. So it's like they've seen some shit.
Right.
It makes sense. However, the loss of being able to flee as a charge response is the reason you won't see it.
Right.
I think that it robs too much tactical flexibility from an army that is inherently toughness 3.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to see something like that. I do think that rerolling ones to hit in shooting in close combat is that's a nice touch because, again, they're still strength 3. Yeah. So it's a distinct
possibility.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see what happens. I do hope that they do go that way. I hope that they use game mechanics to differentiate the elf armies instead of just being like, well, these elves wear white and are fast, and these elves wear black and are mean.
Mm-hmm.
And these elves
wear green and eat mushrooms.
And eat mushrooms. So they are tripping balls all the time.
All right. So we'll obviously know more very soon. We'll be talking about it next week. But for now, let's talk a little bit about our viewer poll for this week. And the question that I came up with is, do you think that the High Elves will retain Always Strike First, or do you think that that is going to be gone? You can cast your vote at jadedgamercast.com on our weekly listener poll. Hey, look, Nathan, something shiny. Dead Space was balls. For those of you who have been watching the Jaded Gamercast plays with Nathan and I, we have been playing various video games, SimCity and Dead Space 3, posting episodes up on Wednesdays and Fridays for people to enjoy. If you haven't checked them out, you can check them out by going to jadedgamercast.com and looking for those posts, checking them out. We just posted the last episode of Dead Space 3, and by the end of it, Nathan had gotten really quiet because I think he was just utterly annoyed with the boredom level of the game.
Well, I mean, hadn't I asked you like 3 times, like, can we just end this now?
And I was like, let's just get out of space. Let's just get into the next area, as opposed to like we end it because of retarded glitches and, you know, just not being able to figure out that we need to telekinesis a crank.
That's the thing is I think that the game had a bunch of good ideas, and I think that for me what killed it was cheap, glitchy, periodic fucking mechanics for the sole purpose to overcome issues in their own game engine, right? Because, like, after literally using my brain telepathy to fucking rip a train around a train yard and pull it on rails, and I mean, it's on rails, so I guess it's fucking easy, right? The thing.
This wasn't like a normal train. This was like a 20-foot-tall tank train.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, like...
I'm
ripping this around because they realized that their game engine couldn't allow me to, like, interact with a lever, so they wanted something to do. And then not 5 minutes later, we're in a fight, and I'm just like, shit, if I can pull trains, I'm just going to throw this guy off the moving train. No, it doesn't work on people. It only works on very specific objects located at plot-convenient locations. And you're just like, you know what? Fuck off. It's such a lazy game design decision. Yep. Not to mention the fact that we're having fucked up load screens, like the one between episodes 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
And did you cut any of that load screen out, or can people watch it in its full?
They watch the full fucking glory of load screen.
That
was a huge aspect of the game, was the fact that, like, we talked about the poor game design. We talked about it in both elevator rides. We talked about it in The Matrix. And we talked about it in the bit where you were watching a cinematic that I was frozen during the entire thing.
Yes.
You know, and in terms of glitches, the game was just rife with them. You know, you didn't know which parts of the environment you could interact with. Cutscenes were glitchy. Stuff was not lined up properly. I think my favorite glitch was when we got in the episode 4, when we got to the bridge of the ship, and we're on the bridge, and we do our Star Tours ride into the graveyard and the broken moon and all that kind of crap. And there's some BS conversation happening in the background where they're like, oh, we don't know what's going on, and we didn't get a signal from dude's wife. And then all of a sudden, mine animations start happening, but like nobody reacts to it other than saying like, "Oh, there's something on the radar. Something's going on." And then like it was clear that the mine animation happened well before it was supposed to, because it just kept resetting and recycling. Yeah. And you can see it because it was happening on my screen there that we were recording. And then they zoom into the screen, and that was the moment when the mine animation was supposed to happen. Nothing happens whatsoever, but the viewport screen is broken now all of a sudden. You can see the jagged edges of the glass around it. And I think you make a comment about like, well, it's interesting that explosive decompression does nothing or something like that. And then they pull back, and then the screen explodes, and then there's the whole thing on the bridge. It's just like, are you fucking kidding? Like, how do you let something like that go?
Yeah.
And considering the fact that I downloaded a patch for that game a month and a half after it came out, and you still didn't fix that shit?
Yeah. Well, and again, I mean, I'm not sure whether this is a fault of the games or an EA server issue, because we know that they have those in spades. Mm-hmm. But I mean, there was an issue again in episode, you know, in the fourth part, when you and I are both watching a cutscene. Mine had, because, you know, just based on what I could hear from you and see and on mine, I had finished mine early. And so I was literally just like hovering in space waiting.
Yep.
And it said waiting on other player. I'm just sitting there. And then all of a sudden, without my game even loading at all, it just says, your partner has died.
Yep.
And I was just like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, I didn't have a chance to do anything. Like, yeah. you kept me in limbo.
Yeah.
And then you tell me later, and you can see it in the episode, that at the exact same place, you don't do anything, and it just says that I had died.
Yeah.
Your partner has died.
Yeah.
So again, we have this out-of-sync bullshit with the servers that force our co-op game out of sync, and they basically just decide to kill us and have us go through the cutscene again. And you're like, come on.
Well, the stupid thing about it was, like, the cutscene ended, and my character, you know how, like, the way the game is played, like, they go into the cinematics and stuff happens, and then they pull the camera back, and then suddenly you're in-game and you're controlling your character, right? Because they want that seamless progression of cinematic to gameplay, cinematic to gameplay, to give you that immersion.
And I thought that they did it very well at the beginning of the game.
Yes.
But as soon as you hit that gigantic fucking load screen, it all just fell apart.
Oh.
They use every elevator ride as a fucking load screen. So all you're doing is standing there shooting the wall.
There were parts where we would just go touch a door. It wasn't even a fucking elevator. And it would it would take 2 minutes to open a door. You know, or you would have to hold.
They're trying to load the environment behind.
You would have to hold telekinesis for 30 seconds because it was loading the environment behind it. And it's not like this is 80 players connected to a tribe server that's an open area map that takes up this enormous amount of memory because it has to load all this open area and there's all these internet connections. This is two people in like a corridor.
Yep.
And you can't load that shit? Like,
it's not like none of our computers are bad.
No, we have high-end computers.
Yeah, we do. So it's not, you know, it's not a processing fault.
It was a shit game.
So, yeah, you know, and it's a shame because I'd heard really good things about the first Dead Space. I was actually really excited to give it a shot and it out. And then, yeah, like I said, it failed to deliver, and it was such a shame because I'd heard good things about the franchise. I wanted it to be good, and yeah, it just, the game falls apart. And when we're that early in, because realistically, what did we play for? An hour and a half?
About an hour and 20 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, so we're an hour and 20 minutes into the game, and at about an hour and 10 minutes, I am so bored and so fed up with all of the issues that I don't even want to play it anymore. Well, so,
and that was exactly it. You know, I think one of the interesting things is I went and I read a review and I watched a couple game reviews on it. And they had talked about like the fact that it had so many glitches and the fact that like origin servers were really bad for it. And the fact that, you know, like the game had stopped becoming survival horror and it actually just turned into a poorly written story with bad acting that was essentially Gears of War.
Yes.
You know, Gears of War Lite. And you know, one of the things that you and I never got a chance to do was apparently the way that they had written it. I actually found this to be very, very interesting. And if they had done a good job making the game, it could have been amazing. But apparently, the further you get into the game, the cinematics that your character sees are actually different from the cinematics that I see because your character is going crazy. So the trick is that me never seeing your cinematics is, do I notice that you're losing it? Whereas you'll get into rooms and there'll be like this red light permeating the room, but like that's not on my screen. And yeah, like you'll see like a nutcracker on the floor and you'll go pick it up because it has some semblance of meaning with regards to your murdered family. And like on my cutscene, it's just you walking around in a daze and then like holding your hands out, kind of looking at your hands. But of course, to me, I don't know that you're holding a nutcracker. And so I was just like, oh, that's so interesting. Fuck that game for being so shitty that I couldn't even get to that point. Because every time I stopped to think about going back and playing that game to try to get to the end of the terrible story, I cringed. I was like, oh, I just don't – why would I want to do that to myself?
Well, and I think the other thing that is the game is inaccessible. This was both of our first Dead Space game. Mm-hmm. So I do not know what these zombie things are. I don't know why the fucking crazy pimp was blowing shit up and trying to kill us.
Gordon Freeman.
Yes, mm-hmm. I don't know why Gordon Freeman pimp was trying to do that. Like, I just don't understand. And I feel like the third game was not allowing me to get in on the story. So I don't know. Again, was this an intentional decision where they're just like, no new players should ever play this game. We only want people that are continuing this. Or if, again, it was just bad script writing.
It's script running that takes into account the fact that nerds who consume it consume everything and every drop that's given. So, like, you know, the more I learned about it, the more I learned that Gordon Freeman was actually the head of a cult, and the cult of these people apparently worshipped the xenomorph mutant thingies, whatever they were called.
Okay.
And, like, that's why they were attacking the last battalion and, like, essentially creating all this havoc and so
on. And why
so
were forth. They the last battalion? Because they're
last means last, idiot. Remember?
No, I know. But as I said in the show, they didn't have a fucking hiring fair. Like, how are you the
last?
You
also said it was
like
a fiasco.
It's true.
A fiasco of the hiring fair. Yeah, that's really all that comes down to. But the next game that we will be playing, Nathan and I have decided, is going to be Minecraft. So look forward to that in the next couple of weeks. And we will also be looking at doing StarCraft as well. That has been Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I am Nathan.
Have a good one.
Cheers.